Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. A live show coming to you on this Thursday. What is it? The 14th of August. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to join us on the program and put your 2 cents worth in, you may do so at 866-546-5254. Love to have you do that on whatever subject we happen to be talking about at the time. And much to talk about there is. Do want to remind all of you, we will be heading out for the Democratic National Convention. And we'll be doing our show live from there on the 25th, 26th, 27th, and 28th of August. So do keep that in mind. 25th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. I'll be coming to you from Denver. And also would like to remind any of you, if any of you folks that live down on Gulf Drive in Naples or driving one of them there Rolls Royces, would like to contribute to our fund for heading on out to Denver, way we'd be most appreciative. We certainly would. And you can do that by going to theguyjamesshow.com, theguyjamesshow.com. So much to talk about, so little time. We're going to have Chris Gunn, who's the communications liaison for American Small Business League, to talk about a bill in front of Congress right now that's going to help big business grab some more of the small business money. We'll also talk about how it seems corporate America is paying damn little of the taxes, and that means you know who is paying it, you and I. That's how it works, isn't it? I just did see a TV report from Denver a few minutes ago. Someone sent it to me, and thank you, Harold, for sending me that link. The folks in Denver have a nice big old meatpacking warehouse already set up with chain link fence cells and barbed wire and everything to put protesters in. So I'm anxiously awaiting that, and I don't plan on going inside that place, but I'm anxiously awaiting to see what they're going to do with protesters that keep them away from the general area. I guess they will, as usual. They try to anyway, but it should be interesting. Please, emailers, our right-wing friends, give me a break on the John Edwards stuff. I really have had enough of that. If you want to start a sleaze war with about politicians, I'd be more than happy to do so. I've got enough ammunition just on John McCain, for example, if you want to do that. If you want to have a sleaze war, if you want to get into the mud, I can get into the mud. If you want to talk about John Edwards' fooling around, why other people have done that, that's nothing new. I don't know why people are surprised. Yes, I think as his wife is ill with cancer, John could have certainly done better. But how many of you have heard the Limbaugh talk on that? Let me do that right away. Have you heard what Rush Limbaugh said about Elizabeth Edwards? Have you heard this? You talk about going low. Now, I think this is lower than John Edwards. Of course, what would be new about that with Rush Limbaugh, with his drug-addled brain? There's something wrong with the man. And you can tell he dices around this. He's like a little kid that's got something he wants to tell. And go, gosh, I just don't know if I should. And he plays with it for a little while, and then he finally comes out with it as though he's really doing something just really fiendish, you know, getting this out. Rush Limbaugh is a man with no ethics, no morals. How the Republicans ever linked up with him, well, I understand why, because he's a good mouthpiece for him. He's a very good entertainer. But why anybody would want to link up with this guy? And do keep in mind, Rush always likes to say, and you know that favorite term of his, they say, or we have reports of, it's been reported, media reports say, we've heard from insiders, we've heard from sources. You never pin anything down with Limbaugh. But I've heard it said that Rush Limbaugh, when he was held at the Fort Lauderdale airport for having somebody else's prescription with 29 Viagra pills in it, 29, Rush. It was in somebody else's name, which is illegal to have a prescription made out in somebody else's name. And he had just come back from the Dominican Republic, known for its sex trade of underage girls. Prostitution is rampant, underage boys, which I've heard it said would be more to Limbaugh's liking than the others. So I've heard it said, sources say, reports are, that's the way Limbaugh is. But anyway, this is what Limbaugh said. If you haven't heard it yet, then let's just play it.
Back to the phones. Winston-Salem, North Carolina. This is James. Nice to have you here, sir. Hello. Is he gone? James, you there? Oh, darn. He wanted to talk about Edwards and who knew and what were the motivations. And I've got a theory about the motivations. Well, I don't know that I can put this one on the air.
Why not?
Well, at some point you got to exhibit maturity and restraint. You know, and I do that constantly. Let me see if I can run you through this and get you to think what I'm thinking without my actually saying it. That might be a pretty big talent, if I could do that. Make you think what I'm going to say without my having to say it. Therefore, if anybody gets in trouble for saying it, you say it. We know, we've been told that Elizabeth Edwards is smarter than John Edwards. That's part of the puff pieces on them that we've seen. Ergo, if Elizabeth Edwards is smarter than John Edwards, is it likely that she thinks she knows better than he does what his speeches ought to contain and what kind of things he ought to be doing strategy-wise in the campaign? If she is smarter than he is, could it have been her decision to keep going with the campaign? In other words, could it be that she doesn't shut up? Now, that's as far as I'm going to go.
Well, Snurdly says he's missing something. If you're missing it, you're going to have to provide it. What are you missing? I can't close the loop on it. I can't close the loop on it. I'm in a little quicksand already today, talking about how the chicks are giving us boring pictures of the female athletes from the Olympics. Because I know, the diversity crowd is going to be upset. They're going to just, what are you giving the Olympics just so you guys can ogle women? Yes, because we do not care to watch them compete. But back to Elizabeth and the Brett girl. I'm sorry, my friends. I can't. It just seems to me that Edwards might be attracted to a woman. Whose mouth did something other than talk? Okay, we're back. Ladies and gentlemen, my theory that I just explained to you about why, what could have John Edwards' motivations been to have the affair with Riley Hunter, given his wife is smarter than he is and probably nagging him a lot about doing this, and he found somebody that did something with a mouth other than talk. I think I can back this up from her. We have a soundbite. This is February 2007. She was on the tabloid show Extra. And this is what she said. Listen very carefully.
The whole experience was life-altering for me. One of the great things about John Edwards is that he's so open and willing to try new things and do things in new ways.
Open to new things. Folks, it is what it is. You get mad at me for bringing the truth to you, but it is what it is.
Ah, yes, Rush. Thank you for enlightening us all on this subject. We are happy to know what you have to say about it, as usual. Mr. Limbaugh, people don't get any lower than he is. I tried, I sent email today. I called his offices and ask him to come on the show. Of course, I knew that he wouldn't. Let me state that right out. I didn't call and didn't email knowing that, or even thinking there was a slight chance that he would do it. But I thought I owed it to my audience anyway to at least try. He would never come and have the courage to defend any of the statements that he says. He's not that kind of a man. He's not the kind of man that has any courage. He's not the kind of man that has any standards. He's not the kind of man that has any ethics, any moral standing whatsoever, and everybody knows that. And I would say to you, Rush, that despite the transgression of John Edwards, and it is the same transgression that millions of people in this country have committed, there is no argument about that. But despite all that, Rush, I would tell you that at least it was a girl, okay? Unlike many of the things we've heard about you, unlike being a hopeless drug addict to the point where you blew out your eardrums because of the drugs and knew it was happening, unlike you, Rush, at least John Edwards came forth and said that he was sorry, and that remains to be seen if he's telling the whole truth or not, I know. But don't rub that story in us anymore. Like I said, if you want to start a sleaze war, we've got more than enough ammunition to do that. You know that. So why indulge in it? The only reason the right-wingers want to indulge in a sleaze campaign because they know they've got the bigger megaphone. They know that they can tell the big lie over and over again, and everybody will hear it. That's why they would indulge in that. And that's the same thing right now with this Corsi that's got this book out about Obama that was on Hannity, and he's been all over the place with this book. That's why you see him every place in these with these interviews now on TV. He's been on all the cable shows. He's been on all the talk shows, most of the talk shows. a man with no credibility whatsoever. Same guy that wrote that book, I think it was called Unfit to Serve or something like that about Clinton. About Kerry, I guess it was. He writes filth about everybody, and the right-wingers all go out and buy his books. The Richard Mellonscapes and people, the Heritage Foundation and all that go out and buy their books and launch them at number one so they get a big kickoff on it. And then all the right-wing megaphones start preaching it. And, of course, he's got this book out. I think it's number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And yet, we have a guy that I know, a friend of mine by the name of Cliff Schechter. Cliff Schechter has a book out on John McCain. Have you seen Cliff on the... Cliff's a credible guy. Have you seen him on TV all over the place? Of course you haven't. Of course not. Because the right-wing noise machine is 100 times louder than what we have on the left. That's why. Brings back what was the old saying about from Adlai Stevenson? Raise your hand if you remember Adlai Stevenson. Holes in his shoes and all that. He said, I've been thinking that I would make a proposition to my Republican friends that if they'll stop telling lies about the Democrats, we'll stop telling the truth about them. And believe me, we have got a hell of a lot of truth. If you want to talk about sleaze and slime, we've got a lot of truth that we can talk about the Republicans. But I got better things to do on the program, so let's do them. 866-546-5254. I see that John McCain, John Sidney McNasty McCain, has announced that Joe Lieberman, he's sending emissaries, Joe Lieberman and Lindsey Graham are going to Georgia. Yeah. Lieberman and Graham are going to Georgia as kind of representatives for what the Armed Services Committee or whatever committee that is. Now that's reassuring, isn't it? Got Joe Lieberman, he's going to go over and he's going to tell him, no, you guys stop that, no more fighting. I don't want any more fighting from all of you people. You Russians, you go home. And Lindsey Graham. Now, these two shadows of John McCain, first of all, both of them sicken me, especially Lieberman. And we're going to talk more about Joe Lieberman later on in the program. But it is reassuring to know that Lieberman and Graham are going to Georgia. Yeah, and I think John McCain should get his act together right now and go ahead and name Joe Lieberman as his vice presidential candidate. Don't you think that'd be a nice, it's a political marriage made in heaven right there? Absolutely. And then he can name, if he gets elected, he can name Lindsey Graham as Secretary of State. Now, I think that that's a nice threesome right there with McNasty as the president, Lieberman as the vice president, and Graham as Secretary of State. Wouldn't that be great? Mm-hmm. It sure would. Well, they're talking, you know, I've heard a lot of talk about this, and you probably have as well, are these war talks, is this dust-up between Russia and Georgia, is that good for John McCain? Is everybody in this country now sitting by, oh my, there's a possible war going on, we better get John McCain because he's a good military leader. First of all, John McCain's never been a military leader. Oh, he's what, a squad leader or something? And the Air Force or Navy. So, but he's never really been a military leader. And so let's throw that one out the window. He doesn't know anything about making battle plans and strategies and all that. He doesn't know anything about it. But is he benefiting from this? And I think McCain and his neocon friends and the supporters of the Republicans certainly think that he is benefiting from this war because he's now able to try and look like a leader, trying to look very presidential, trying to look tough. And the media, they think people continue to trust McCain more than Obama on war and on defense and on security issues. And my question is, how much sense does that make in a country mostly opposed to the neocon wars I mean, that's a big mystery to me. Have the media not seen the polls concerning the Bush war? Do the people still trust the neocons on making war? But that's the conventional wisdom all the same, and it might be right. It might be right. And after all, the American people, as we've discussed a lot here lately, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but we have discussed a lot here lately that the American people are seriously confused about most things most of the time. When they have the least notion of what happened at all. And after all, for example, most Americans think Israel is a valuable ally in a dangerous part of the world doing important work defending us and our interest in the Middle East. And that's pure poppycock. Even people who oppose Israel and American policy in that area often believe that, though. You know, we've had decades of bullshit from nearly every politician from Madison Avenue and from every major source of news that they can convince pretty much everyone that war's peace and freedom is slavery. That's how it is with the American people. How do you think Chevy sold the Vega and Ford the Pinto? I'm sorry to say that about the American people, but I think it's becoming more and more clear that either they just don't give a damn, or they don't take the time to go out and find the facts. They'd rather be convinced by somebody like a Limbaugh or a Hannity or a Savage or a Mark Levin or a Mike Gallagher or Laura Ingraham or any Glenn Beck or any one of those folks. They'd rather get their facts from them and go to the polls thinking that they're educated on the subject, when in fact, they don't have a clue. I was reading an article about AIPAC last night. But it isn't just Israel by a long ways. Our entire foreign policy comes to this. We are now, and we're recognized around the world, we are the Blackwater of the world. We've got this huge taxpayer-financed military establishment with nothing to do in the way of actually defending America or America's freedom or America's interest. Our military's got no such mission at all. So now we supply the gunfighters for the other nations with enough money to lease or rent our forces, but not enough to buy and maintain force. We don't, you know, go to the aid of those countries. They're on their own. And our military establishments is the one-stop rent-a-killer business of the world. The problem is, for you and I, the upkeep's really paid entirely by the American taxpayers who get nothing out of it. We're getting nothing from it. What are we getting from this Bush war in Iraq? Come again? What is it we're getting from that? Oh, I see. It's the war on terror. That's right. We're safer now because of the war in Iraq. Okay. Sorry, I forgot about that one. But all this rent paid by the foreign governments, of course, goes to lobbyists and to government officials. So there are many people who get a good living from this racket in America, and American people are so damned infuriatingly, patriotically stupid about all this that there's just precious little chance of ending it without blowback bad enough to make the people blame our leaders rather than the foreigners hitting us in response to all the meddling and other people's wars that we've done. And that might take a lot. The Spanish people were smart enough to blame 311 on the foreign policy of their conservative party they had policy that's sent the Spanish forces to meddle in Iraq in support of George Bush. But then the truth came out. The truth came out in Spain, and the people immediately voted out their neocons, and the socialists did their bidding and got the troops out of Iraq. Pronto. The people got their way. But when Al-Qaeda hit us on 9/11, America didn't blame the U.S. political leadership that had been meddling in the Muslim world, making tens of millions of unnecessary enemies for our country for more than half a century. Us and the British, my God, think about the history over there of the United States and the British, particularly the British, and the French. Don't want to leave them out. Check out your history of what has taken place in the Middle East, the meddling from outside, and you would understand immediately why Britain and France and the United States are hated in that area. And if you study it all very closely, you will understand. You will understand the hatred, the animosity toward Britain and France and the United States in that region. So we've made plenty of enemies over there. I'm not saying everything that's happened has been our fault, but we are paying the price for meddling in affairs that we have no business meddling in, trying to steal resources from other countries that don't belong to us. Americans didn't immediately insist on getting U.S. forces the hell out of that entire region. We should. Instead, the Americans, obediently, you must say, fell in line for more intervention and more war and more destruction in that region, and those people resent it. And you remember when this all was starting. You remember this build up the war and the music on CNN and Fox, the war graphics and the war music they come up with. They had a chance to really get ready for this one. It had been trumpeted for a long time, several months, in fact. We're going to get even. It's what Americans do. They get even, by God. Yes. Don't get mad. Get even. We got both. And so all across this country, when this thing started, people just rejoiced. They were so damn happy by the prospect of destroying Arab people and Arab countries. Didn't matter if they were innocent or not. And all you had to do is listen. It's okay to destroy those people because, after all they are is ragheads. Ragheads, and ragheads are our enemy. How was it again that these ragheads became our enemies? How many thousand miles away are they? When the first intervention into their countries ever happened, you go back to the Crusades even. The Westerners have invaded that area, have controlled that area for how long now, and people wonder why they're angry. This is a terrible truth to remember as we think about not only the future of American relations with Iran and Syria, but that little silly war on the Russian-Georgian border that our neocons are making so very much of, like it's just a major thing. But I would caution everybody to keep all this in mind as the November election comes near. You know what this is about by now. McCain, without question, is one of these guys that it's Israel first, and he's one of the most hardcore of them. He's been coached by Joey Lieberman, who, by the way, argues that it's a U.S. duty to ensure God's promise to Abraham about Israel. That's a quote from him. A U.S. duty to ensure God's promise to Abraham about Israel, to make sure that promise is kept. And now we hear that McCain's considering Republican Congressman Eric Cantor to be his running mate. Cantor, needless to say, is more than eager to spend American blood and treasure to secure Israel. And speaking in Israel, Cantor pushed the same false assertion that is the staple of the U.S. leaders in both parties. And let me quote him. He says, "What befalls Jerusalem threatens the security of the United States and its allies worldwide. That's because Jerusalem and Israel are ground zero in the global battle between tyranny and democracy, radicalism and moderation, terrorism and freedom." That, of course, is utter nonsense. It's nonsense of the highest order. And Lieberman and Cantor both know it. They're smart enough to know that, but they also know that they can sway the American people. And that's the idea. Both of these guys, Cantor and Lieberman, are absolutely committed to Israel as a religious idea, not because it's got anything to do with U.S. security, because it does not. We've asked that question of political foes many times. Explain to us, please. Please explain to us, what does Israel have to do with the security of the United States? I would tell you nothing. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. Well, McCain has got a series of very clear-headed policies toward terrorism and Islamic extremism. And he's hell-bent to go to war anytime he gets the chance over there. He told a conference of Christians United for Israel, and that's quite a group. Isn't that Reverend Hagee's group, Christians United for Israel, that he was pleased that they recognized it was America's duty to defend Israel, and telling them the fat lie that President Washington and the Founding Fathers would support Americans fighting Israel's wars? Candor playing to both sides in this. Israel First and the evangelical group has made it abundantly clear where his primary loyalty lies. He says, and let me quote him here, "Jerusalem is not merely the capital of Israel, but the spiritual capital of Jews and Christians everywhere. It's the site of the first and second temples, which house the Holy of Holies. And it's the direction in which we Jews face when we pray. The glorious city of David is bound to the Jewish people by an undeniable 3,000-year historical link." Well, isn't that precious? And I know a lot of people believe that. And you can believe what you want. But my own view is, and I'm so tired of hearing it, you know, I'm so tired of hearing it about God's promise. My own view is that if God promised Palestine to the Israelis, God is more than capable of keeping that promise himself. He wouldn't need us to do it. And America is in no way committed to expend the lives of our soldiers, our kids, in a war over conflicting interpretation of God's word. If God wants the Israelis to have Israel, he will see to it that they do. If you are a believer, would you then doubt the omnipotence of God? I don't think so. The Israelis and the Muslims should be perfectly free to fight over whether Yahweh and Abraham or Allah and Muhammad are right. And Americans should be perfectly free to draw the correct conclusion that the United States does not have a dog in that fight. We just don't. Well, except for money and influence from AIPAC. And there's this genuine constitutional question of church-state separation on the issue. Why should American taxpayers have their earnings and their children's lives spent to defend what I absolutely believe is a theocracy in Israel, or for that matter, to protect Islamic theocracy in Saudi Arabia? Why should we be involved in either one of those? Imagine the protest you would hear, and the church-state separation rhetoric that you'd hear from the media and both political parties, if a congressman introduced a bill calling for the U.S. to designate an amount equivalent to what's spent to protect Israel and Saudi Arabia to be sent to the Vatican, for example. Same thing, isn't it? And I am not Catholic. I just use that as an example. Vatican's a nation-state like Israel and Saudi Arabia. Seems to me it needs defending as well. It's got threats from Al-Qaeda and other Islamists. There's three realities in this whole thing. Number one, U.S. survival is not at stake in the Israeli-Muslim war. That is the truth. The taxes of Americans, number two, should not be spent to defend theocratic states. And number three, holy books are sometimes used as crazy tools to use as guides for U.S. foreign policy. In America, however, these realities lie unspoken because of the lobbying efforts of AIPAC and the pro-Israel mantras of the politicians that they buy. And let's just tell it like it is. They buy politicians with campaign contributions and promises of media exposure. And McCain and Obama get up and kiss their asses. The idea of Joe Lieberman saying that George Washington would have fought Israel's wars. What an insane thing to say. I found a quote by President George Washington that he wrote in 1796, and you tell me if you think that he would have fought Israel's wars. And I quote it, "Against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake. Since history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of Republican government," end quote. That, my friend, Mr. McCain, my friend, Mr. Lieberman, does not say that George Washington would fight Israel's wars. It says exactly the opposite. Well, someone brings up on the chat room, and how does one decide whether the U.S. is how God chooses to protect Israel? Well, I just don't think God needs us to. He would direct us to if you're a believer, and God is all omnipotent, like I said, and all-knowing and all-seeing and never wrong. Certainly wouldn't need us. We're going to pause for a break. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so hang around.
He's practicing the politics of the past, John McCain. His attacks on Barack Obama, not true, false, baloney, the low road, baseless. John McCain, same old politics, same failed policies. Barack Obama supports a $1,000 middle class tax cut, an energy plan that takes on oil companies, develops alternative fuels, and breaks the grip of foreign oil. That's change we can believe in.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
In Iraq.
We'll be right back.
we're back, and see, we had a couple of callers at that time, and call and hang up. Why do people do that, I wonder? Isn't the machine working? Doesn't it say something like, hi, this is the Guy James Show. We'll be with you very shortly. Doesn't it say something like that? I wouldn't have to take time to listen to it again. But it should be picking up your calls and saying something like that, and then you should just hang on until we can take your call, okay? That's easy enough. Hey, I want to thank Scott from Stockholm, our friend Scott from Stockholm, Sweden. And I want you to know, Scott, I'm working that song up that you sent, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it next week sometime. I'm going to do it. Stock wrote a song, and he put some lyrics to an old song, and he says, you let it slip that you play several musical instruments, so I expect to hear you crooning this as the opening song on this Tuesday show. Well, I didn't make it by Tuesday, Stock and Scott. But anyway, I am going to do it, so I hope you're hearing this, and you shall get a live performance next week sometime. Don't know what day. Sorry to disappoint you about Tuesday. Just wasn't possible with my busy schedule. You're listening to The Guy James Show, 866-546-5254. Where was I going with this? I had something here I was going to mention about this Schuneman link. Is that how you pronounce his name, Schuneman? This lobbyist that's one of McCain's. My God, how many lobbyists can you have in one campaign that have worked for foreign governments and all that? How many can you have in one? The oil companies, banks, lobbyists, one after another. Does that not give you some idea what kind of a presidency John McCain would have? Doesn't it give you a hint, if you're thinking about voting for him, that he's got scoundrels like that voting for him? You know, this latest one, this Schuneman link, lobbying for Georgia. And then, you know, got contacts with McCain, just bang, bosom bunny buddies, he's a lobbyist. And I'm not saying you can't know a lobbyist, but when you find out he's lobbied McCain on behalf of Georgia like 39 times, is there any wonder that McCain is standing up defending Georgia, Shalikashvili, no matter what he does? It's not a healthy relationship. And then you got these reports that Ralph Reed, with all the scandal that follows him around, he's raising money for John McCain's campaign. And then we got another new report that reveals yet another connection between McCain and the scandal surrounding criminal lobbyist Jack Abramoff. Now get this. According to the report, Abramoff's law firm hired one of McCain's closest campaign advisors to work on their behalf during McCain's investigation into the scandal. Imagine that. Abramoff's law firm hired one of McCain's closest campaign advisors to work on his and Ralph Reed's behalf during McCain's investigation into the Abramoff scandal. And they turned to a former McCain campaign advisor for help. And so McCain puts out this public statement praising the firm, and according to public watchdog group, Schuneman's dual role, sometimes advising McCain as a candidate and sometimes advising private clients on their interactions with him as a senator, raises serious conflict of interest questions, do you think? And we had this report earlier this week that Ralph Reed, one of Abramoff's closest business associates, sent an email solicitation claiming to be a member of McCain's Victory 2018 and asking people to join me and Joanne at the August 18th event in Atlanta. This makes Reed the second Abramoff-linked fundraiser to raise campaign cash for McCain. Man, oh man. That's what I mean. It's in your face. They don't even care. They know Ralph Reed is a crook. They don't care. The McCain campaigns have been concerned about whether conservative Christian voters would fall in line this fall And so that's why good old Ralphie Reed, the good Christian man that he is, he's the first executive editor of the Christian Coalition, and he tried to run for, Lieutenant Governor of Georgia? But anyway, he's invited well-heeled folks to what he called a very special event that means a fundraiser for McCain in downtown Atlanta on August 18th. Now, Reed, whose own campaign for Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, that's what it was, his own campaign was torpedoed by his affiliation with Jack Abramoff, who's wearing a striped suit right now. And he's also agreed to serve as a member of McCain's Victory 2018. Unbelievable. It just keeps going on and on and on. Abramoff's law firm got plenty of praise from McCain after hiring McCain's advisor to lobby on his behalf. These people are thick as thieves. And yet, people are willing to put him as a president of the United States. The Schumann's firm lobbied McCain's office on four bills and resolutions regarding Georgia, with McCain as the co-sponsor and supporter of all of them. Now tell me that's not a quid pro quo. "49 contacts with McCain or his staff regarding Georgia. Schumann's firm has lobbied the senator or his aides on at least 47 occasions since 2001 on the behalf of the governments of Taiwan and Macedonia, which each paid Schumann and his partner, Mike Mitchell, over $500,000, Romania, which paid him over $400,000, and Latvia, which paid nearly $250,000, and federal law requires Schumann to publicly disclose to the Justice Department all of his lobbying contracts as an agent of a foreign government. And McCain is completely bought and paid for on this issue. And when you look at his reaction this past few days, the degree to which he came out blasting on this issue, to me, is very telling and is very troubling. He stands up posing like he's the president already. We're all Georgians now. And he all but declared war on Russia. But it turns out that his foreign policy advisor, this Randy Schumann, is a lobbyist. His firm Orion Strategies, an active supporter of advocacy groups supporting the Iraq War, has received $800,000 from the government of Georgia. Man. And people are thinking about making this man the president and grabbing people like the Schumann and Ralph Reed and all that, bringing them in with him. And it looks like McCain thinks this whole thing's in his political favor. He walks out on the stage and they play the Rocky music. If it turns out that the Georgian president, Shalikashvili, thought he had the backing of the United States because of the money he was funneling to McCain's campaign staff. But McCain, Saakashvili twice mentioned McCain by name, like he expected McCain to send armies to go to war with Russia. They say that some of the Georgian people are saying, where are the Americans? Doesn't look good, John McCain. Doesn't look good at all. 866-546-5254. You heard about the tragedy in Little Rock, Arkansas yesterday. The head of the Arkansas Democratic Party was gunned down in his own office. To show you how these right-wingers think, never missing a beat in their hatred. Michelle Malkin's website and other right-wingers are reporting that the Clintons had the Arkansas Democratic Party chairman killed as a warning to Obama that the same thing will happen to him. These people are crazy, and they're dangerous. And we're dealing with simple-minded zealots here. They'll do anything they're told for the cause. That was still on our website as of a couple hours ago. I wonder if it's been cleaned off yet. Ah, yes. Anyway, I was just looking before the show started today, and it makes me shake my head, kind of shifting gears a little bit. I was reading CNN Money website, as I often do. Boy, I must be bored, huh? I'm not. I enjoy it. I love numbers. Anyway, you read the headlines on there and the articles on there. And gas fuels inflation, little relief in sight. This time wage slaves can't revolt. Home prices down 7.6%. Foreclosures jump. Where else in there? There was one of foreclosures up to an all-time high. Bank settles securities probe. One thing after another of bad news. And the market's up 80 points today. I'm glad it is. But it does make you wonder if we're not talking about just a big contrived situation here. The market goes up. The economic news is terrible. it makes no sense. Gold is dropping like crazy this week. I don't know where gold is today. Let me check here briefly where gold is. Markets. Commodities. Come on, tell us what gold is here today. Working a little slow here, I think, today. Come on. All right, here we go. Gold, minus $17, clear down to $814. I know some people who deal in gold, and a couple of weeks ago was up around $940 again after having been over 1,000. What was it, $1,028 for a couple of days, two, 3 months ago? And it's hovered a little bit over 900, 910, 920, 930, got up to 940 some. I don't know, I think it was last week. Maybe 2 weeks ago. That's, should I sell? Should I buy? What should I do with gold? And so hung on to it in hopes it was going to go higher. And here it is, $130 an ounce lower. What a volatile market that is. But I've got a couple of friends who work on Wall Street. And they tell me the place is absolutely insane these days. You know, you see these pictures of them yelling and screaming and all that. They also say that it's the word around that the sales of Tums and antacids are at an all-time high at the local drugstore there. You can't keep them in stock. And, of course, looking at the market, uncertainty is king. And no one knows what's going to happen from day to day, at least the common man doesn't. And Wall Street, Street's always been nothing more than, in my opinion, a big casino. But it appears to me these days the gambling addicts are running the show there. And one thing about Wall Street, which is in fact the hallowed ground of investors and runaway capitalism, is that it has always been a place where money's manufactured out of thin air. That's right. Nothing is produced there. Nothing is consumed there but paper. Nothing but pure risk-taking or insider information. And I hear that insider trading investigations are up 25% this year over what they were. And oh, sure, one could always invest in what's known as old standbys, blue chip stocks like General Motors and the bank stocks. But nowadays, some of those stocks aren't worth the paper they're printed on. And the folks on Wall Street are trying to get themselves back to the old days of their eye-popping year-end bonuses that they use to buy estates and fancy cars. They say that around Christmas time, and dealers around New York City get an extra stock of luxury automobiles in because the big bonuses are coming out. The diamond dealers down on Fifth Avenue know that they're going to have it good. But they're trying to get those huge bonuses and all that back. back to the days of getting something for nothing, and it really is, in many cases, something for nothing. Actually getting a lot for nothing, but reality is sitting in for many. And even the bonuses for some of those people that are used to living high, and even their jobs are disappearing. And, you know, people like Bear Stearns going down, companies like Bear Stearns going down, and many of the investment firms cutting jobs. Life's changing in America, not just on Wall Street, but everywhere, but except for maybe a few ultra-rich enclaves where people have got billions of dollars, hundreds of millions, and really they aren't all that affected. But reality is setting in, and probably a little bit too slowly. Some people just won't accept the fact that the gravy train might be over. You say, oh, guy, don't be a pessimist. Well, look around. You got this drill, drill, drill crowd, which is so utterly silly that they continue to wait for Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy to bring them 99-cent gasoline again. And they believe we'll get it if we only allow ExxonMobil and their pals to drill all they want to offshore. And if they don't find enough oil offshore, they'll insist on drilling on the Washington, D.C. Mall if they have to. But life is drastically changing in the United States. I see demand for oil is down. That's good. There's not going to be a lot people can do about home heating oil come here in just a couple of months. Up in the east, in the north, they're going to have to buy the fuel oil to turn the thermostat down a little bit this year. But life is changing, and I don't think it's changing for the better. We've got a lot of inflation going on right now. People are being dragged, kicking, and screaming into another sort of reality that I don't think they're going to enjoy. For one thing, we're going to have to stop, and we're going to be forced to stop being these runaway consumer society that we've been. I've indulged in it, you've indulged in it, most everybody has. It's going to come to an end soon. Not to say we can't all live good lives and have the necessities of life and all that, but we've been consumed by consumerism, and something you got to give sooner or later. Old Mother Earth doesn't have enough to support all that for all of us. So either going to have to be fewer of us, or we're going to have to consume a lot less than we are right now. Can't keep it up where we are, that's for certain. Well, we're coming up on news time here at the top of the hour already. And let me see where we're at here. News, are they ready yet? Yeah, they're going to be in just a couple of seconds here. Always good to hear what's going on the news. And we hope you'll stay with us for the second hour of the program today. We've got a lot to talk about, and we got Chris Gunn coming up, Communications Director for the American Small Business League, and you'll love to hear what he has to talk about. Very sobering, I'm sure. So stick with us. We'll be back right after the news.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. More than 5,000 International Association of Machinists workers are into the second week of their strike against Hawker Beechcraft in Wichita and Salinas, Kansas. Healthcare, pensions, and sick leave for new workers are among the issues. Striker Ralph Polly says that workers have to put up a fight against takeaways that are creating a bleak future for the next generation of workers.
My main reason to be here is for the people that's going to come here after me. It's just been takeaway, 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 and I think it's time we all take a stand and try to reverse this.
There's no word on when the IAM will return to the bargaining table with Hawker Beechcraft. Striker Lauren Brown expressed the determination common on the picket lines.
One day longer, we need to stay strong, longer than the company.
American Rights at Work is urging people to sign its online petition calling for a Federal Elections Commission investigation of Walmart's efforts to intimidate its workers into voting against Democrat Barack Obama in November. A Wall Street Journal story documented Walmart's mandatory meetings urging its workers not to vote Democratic. Walmart's actions may have been illegal. Walmart Watch is urging support for the American Rights at Work petition.
Walmart Watch says Walmart has a long history of anti-worker practices, and there should be a full investigation of this election's incident by the Federal Elections Commission. New bills signed by Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick will increase that state's spending on green jobs. Jesse Russell reports.
Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick signed a pair of bills on Wednesday that could move that state toward the forefront of the green jobs movement. One of the bills is called the Green Jobs Act and is intended to provide grant money for companies and universities that encourage the training of workers for environmentally friendly jobs and also encourage startups to focus on green development. Over the next 5 years, the bill will provide $68 million to the Green Jobs Initiative. The second law, signed on Wednesday, is intended to require greenhouse gas emissions in the state to be 80% lower than in 1990 by the year 2050.
One GM plant has been spared the chopping block. The American automaker said that an increased interest in fuel-efficient cars will allow it to keep open a plant in Messina, New York, at least until June of 2009. That plant had been scheduled to close at the end of 2008, laying off 250 workers. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Retail sales fell in July, dropping 0.1% as prices continue to climb. This is the first decrease in sales in 5 months as the monetary injection from the government stimulus checks runs out. According to the numbers released by the Commerce Department, the biggest decline came in the automobile sector. Even with gasoline prices easing up slightly toward the end of July, consumers are hesitant to buy new cars.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Every vet respects John McCain's war record. It's his record in the Senate that I have a problem with. He wants us to keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, just like Bush. That's money we could use to build schools and roads and create needed jobs here at home. He even took sides with Bush against increasing health care benefits for veterans. People should let John McCain know. His agenda is not what we need. Not now.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
You've got them. Six. Five. Four. Three. Two. One.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you?
Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us here this afternoon. Good to have you all along. We're going to have a guest coming up in about, 8 minutes or so, so stay tuned for that. We're going to have Chris Gunn from the American Small Business League to talk about tax problems for corporations that, they don't have tax problems, most of them. I guess that's the big thing. And also, here we go again. Some of the world's largest venture capital firms are going to be able to participate in federal small business contracting programs again. Once again, keeping the Small Business Administration money away from who should get it. It was created to help start small business, not hold up mega businesses. But that's how it goes in this country, is it not? Just looking to some of the other news going around, I see that just a few minutes ago, and I know many of you have been waiting with bated breath, to find out the results of the lawsuit in Texas. The wife of megachurch pastor Joel Osteen was, the suit was thrown out. The jury found that that Osteen's wife did not assault the flight attendant. The jury deliberated briefly. It was something or other to do with a stain on her seat in a first-class seat. There was a stain on it, rather, and there was an altercation between her and a flight attendant. What I want to know is, Joel Osteen and his trophy wife, what the hell are they doing flying on a regular airliner, for crying sakes? Even though it was first class, those people are far too good to be flying on a regular airplane. Don't they have doesn't their church have their own plane? Most of these Creflo Dollar and Joyce, whatever her name is, and they've got their big jets. They either lease them or buy them. I mean, I can't believe Osteen's one of the biggest churches in the country wouldn't have his own jet. The very idea of he and his wife on an airplane with the great unwashed masses, it bothers me. You all know how I feel about these evangelists, I hate the fact that they had to fly first class and then get in an altercation with one of the flight attendants over a stain on the seat. My God, you mean they knew the Osteens were coming aboard this plane and they didn't have the seat sanitized and vulcanized and mechanized, and I don't know. I don't understand. Oh, what other was it? Oh, yeah. There was this another story. Let's see if we can get this up here for you. Just a second. Come on here. I don't know what's why the internet's so slow for me this afternoon. Here we go. While they waited. Hey, it's live radio here any time now, okay? Well, moving right along. Maybe you didn't want to hear that story after all. An obese Southwest airline passenger was escorted off a flight for refusing to buy an extra seat. That's right. They told him, hey, you're just too damn big for that seat. You got to buy an extra one. He refused, and he was escorted off the flight. Now, ain't that a shame? Now, I will admit, there's some pretty big people on airplanes, but you got to admit, some of those seats have gradually gotten smaller over the years, haven't they? I don't know. Seems like they have, anyway. Seems like they've gotten a bit smaller here and there. That's a funny story, though. Not funny to the guy who got it thrown off the airplane. And I'm greatly relieved that the Osteens didn't get found guilty of that. And I see Cindy McCain. And I know you were all worried about that. Cindy McCain had a sore wrist or a sprained wrist. She sprained her wrist, and she's going to have a cast on it. Seems someone shook her hand a little bit too vigorously. well out on the stump, and she's not going to be able to shake hands with anybody anymore. So that's a sad story, but at least we know she's got the proper medical care. Probably the finest medical care money can buy, and she now has a cast on her wrist. Now, if it happened to you or anybody else, you'd probably say, well, screw it. But they've got the money, and she will be well taken care of. So that's good to know. I think I'm going to go for a quick break here. I know it's not long since the last break we had, but we've got to get our guest on the line, and we'll do that, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
Love is a secret everyone knows. Love is a chime that rings when the wind blows. To keep yourself honest so it can grow. Cause when you've lost it, your heart turns cold. Isn't it so? I remember the first girl that I really loved. However it hurt her, she loved me enough. I wanted to wander, she knew I would go. She said that she didn't know when I'd be alone, but in good sorrow. Thankfully I was most there when how very unfair it was. Leaving her suddenly just like that, going God knows where I was. Chasing a rainbow, and she understood. She was a prophet. She told me I should follow my heart like I've been told. Seek out your vision before you get old. Isn't it so? I finally see how much she did love me. She set me free. Her last few dollars for gas in my car. Said promise to ride me wherever you are. From out on the highway, I pick a road twice. Always remember a simple little lie. Love is a secret everyone knows. Try too hard to hide it, it never will show. Isn't it so?
And welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Now, as promised, we have with us Communications Director from the American Small Business League, Chris Gunn, on the line with us. Chris, welcome to the show once again.
Guy, thanks for having me on.
Always interesting to talk to you. I, for one, have always been more than a little bit interested in small business, having been a small businessman quite a few years of my life, and sympathetic to the plight of small business, and it kind of gets me angry when we end up having to talk about what we are today, where once again we've got the big corporations and the big companies at the trough trying to keep the money away from the little guys, evidently. And I'm actually talking about this House Resolution 5819. You want to explain a little bit to our audience what that's all about?
Yeah, I can definitely do that. House Resolution 5819 was designed to reauthorize what's called the Small Business Innovation Research Program. And it's a program that specializes in providing grants to companies that are developing specialized treatments for diseases, cancer, you know, they're engaging in cost-prohibitive research and development efforts. It's designed to reauthorize that program, but what legislators have done is they've actually included a provision that will allow firms that are owned and controlled by venture capital firms to be considered small businesses and to participate in this program that was designed for small businesses. The problem with that is that the definition of a small business literally is independently owned and operated. That's what it says in the Small Business Act. And when you have a situation where a venture capital firm or several venture capital firms, say, for example, a venture capital syndicate, own more than 51% of a small business and that small business owner no longer has control of their own company, they're technically not a small business any longer. They have advantages that come along with having that venture capital participation, and they're actually giving themselves advantages over legitimate small businesses when they're competing for these grants, which is one of our concerns. On the other side of that, it's that by allowing these companies to be considered small businesses, they're actually eroding that definition of the small business in the Small Business Act and making it possible for these companies to participate in other programs that have been designed for small businesses that they shouldn't be involved in, but you know, with this legislation, they certainly will be.
Who draws up the borderline here? Is there an actual line in the sand of small business, not small business? Where is that line?
Well, the line depends on the industry that businesses are in. So say, for example, in some industries, there's a size standard of 500 employees or less, and that's the most common standard. But there are specific industries, say, for example, computer manufacturing, where the size threshold is about 1,500 employees. So it ranges depending on where you're at, and it also ranges depending on your annual revenue. So there are two different kinds. There's employee-based size standards and annual revenue-based size standards. And so it really, really depends and ranges. But in this case, the thing that we're most concerned about is really breaking down that foundation of what the definition of a small business is and allowing firms that are would normally be considered what's called other than small or large to be participating in these small business programs.
Well, in this particular instance, where would you like that line to be?
In this particular instance, it would be preferable that those companies not be considered a small business for the sake of this program and for the sake of other small business programs, and that legislators don't actually modify the definition of a small business in the Small Business Act to allow those firms to participate. For years now, the threshold has actually been 49%. So a venture capital firm could own up to 49% of a small business and still participate in the programs. When you start going beyond that and you start messing with you know, that 51% that independently owned and operated, and you really start messing with the foundation of every small business program, you're really setting a dangerous precedent there, and you're creating an incredibly slippery slope upon which I think we're going to see some problems.
And one of the problems we have, of course, is on Capitol Hill, and I wanted to bring up Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is becoming more and more of a mystery to me every day. I'm sure you know what the NVCA is, and for our audience, it's the National Venture Capital Association. And Nancy Pelosi has received significant campaign contributions from this organization and special interests representing the biotech industry. And Nancy's doing a good job for them, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. And you know, I would say that the thing about Nancy Pelosi and the thing about these SBIR grants and this legislation that's so intriguing is that California is actually the top recipient of SBIR grants in the country, actually. The most recent data that we have is from 2004, but it indicates that California received upwards of 20% of the total grants that were awarded and more than 20.5% of the total dollars awarded through this program. So they really have a vested interest in this program, and it's important to see that it's healthy and vibrant. But at the same time, you know, we're seeing Nancy Pelosi essentially back a bill, or multiple bills actually, to break down the definition of a small business, allow venture capital firms to infiltrate the program, and really it's going to hurt small businesses while benefiting those venture capital firms and really the big business interests that are kind of vested in the biotechnology industry. I don't know if you took notice or not, but in the it's near the bottom of our press release that we released today, we actually discussed that from 2005 to 2008, Pelosi actually received a combined $108,000 from Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers, which is actually Al Gore's venture capital firm, the firm that he works for, from pharmaceutical giant Amgen, and then actually Akin, Gump, Strauss, Hoyer, and Feld, which is a large lobbying firm and actually legal firm that represents the biotechnology industry organization or has over the last several years. So we're looking at kind of a situation here where I think our legislators are essentially beholden to interests that have an interest in seeing this bill pass, but those not, aren't necessarily small business interests.
Didn't you mention earlier that by very definition, some of these participation of these venture capital firms would be limited to 49% or less?
Yes.
And Nancy Pelosi has gone so far as to allow some of the nation's largest and wealthiest venture capital firms to own up to 98%, double that?
You bet. And actually, this legislation that the Senate's actually looking at now, and this is going to come into what's called a conference committee with the House bills, actually allows companies that are owned by what's called venture capital syndicates or multiple venture capital firms. So if you have two venture capital firms that own 49% each, you're going to be looking at a substantial percentage of that business being owned. And that's where we derive that number. It's actually okay for two venture capital firms to own up to almost 100% of a small business and then still be considered a small business, and that just doesn't make sense to us.
And to turn to another subject, we've had this report come out this past week from the GAO about corporations paying taxes, and we find that the GAO found that 28% of large corporations paid no taxes at all. Once again, where does that throw the burden on the smaller corporations and on all of us?
Yeah, I think so. And one of the classic cases that I like to reference when it comes down to large corporations kind of skipping out on paying their taxes appropriately is Blackwater. And I don't know if you saw the reports, but essentially Blackwater was allowed to maintain small business status by claiming that 1,000 of their employees were independent contractors and were not actually employees. So they would have been taxed as a large business. But because they were counted as a small business because their 1,000 employees were supposedly not employees at all, they were able to essentially escape that tax bracket and really kind of took the American people for millions and millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, in back taxes.
And it's
definitely kind of one of those situations where if you're a citizen and you're looking at these companies that are essentially getting away with defrauding the federal government, and you're wondering how it's happening, it's being allowed to happen, actually, in some cases. And in Blackwater's case, the SBA actually ruled that it was okay for Blackwater to do that.
It's just a matter of how good of tax attorneys you have and if you've got the legislature on your side these days. It seems silly to me when they talk about tax brackets these days. Oh, they're going to raise it back up to 42% or whatever the percentages were before it was lowered. Nobody pays that. They talk about, well, they're going to take 35% of their income or 38 or 40% and the rich won't be able to put the money. No, nobody with a decent tax attorney pays that kind of money, do they?
No, I don't think so. There are ways around those things. And, it's interesting because, when they're raising these tax brackets and when it comes down to it, tax issues are deceiving on a level that, they're always more complicated than they seem. And so say, for example, in the recent presidential elections and campaigns, we're looking at a situation where one side's saying, the other side's going to raise taxes and that things are going to be bad for small businesses. But when it comes down to it and you really take a look at exactly what's going on with these tax policies, they're not necessarily going to raise small taxes for everyone. In fact, in some cases, those taxes are going to go down. But maybe they're talking about raising taxes for those individuals that are making more than $250,000 a year.
Well, what's the old saying? Figures lie and liars figure. And no places have done any more than on political campaigns and taxes. That's been a scare tactic all my life, anyway. I think you're younger than I am. I can't remember going all the way back to Adlai Stevenson against Dwight Eisenhower that they weren't saying, oh, those Democrats are going to raise your taxes. And it just... always the same old line. I'm getting a little weary of that one. Wish they'd come up with something new, but it's gone on and on. Well, Chris, I hope you'll keep us up to date on what's going on with this. You're welcome anytime, and we want to continue to follow this with the 5819. And I want to encourage my audience, and we're going to give you a couple of sites to go look at. Do look at the political contributions from these people and where it goes and how they vote. It's most important.
Absolutely.
Chris, your website?
It's www.asbl.com.
Okay. And Chris Gunn, Communications Director of the ASBL, thanks so much for being with us again today.
Okay, thanks for having me on again.
Bye now. Once again, we have the SBA created to help small business. And as always, the fat hogs find their way to the trough. And it goes on. Just think of a recent example, not pertaining to this particular bill, but New Orleans. When New Orleans had all this trouble and they needed to get contractors in, and they could have gotten a myriad of small contractors from that area for that general who swooped in and took all the money for the demolition and all that. The big guys always end up at the trough getting it all. And that's just not that's not the way this country was built. That's not how we were founded. But it's the way it is, and we're going to have to live with it, I guess, for a while. Maybe until until we can elect more Democrats, and as like I said, better Democrats. More isn't necessarily the answer. We've got to have some better ones. And I know not all of you agree with me on that. Some of you are. Maybe a little neutral in your politics or in the middle of the road, but most of you, I know where you are. I hear from you. But somebody said that a while back. We need to elect more Democrats, but also better Democrats. And Nancy Pelosi, and I hate to make those charges against the Speaker of the House, the first female Speaker of the House. Personally, I've met Nancy Pelosi. She's nice and all that. I don't have anything against her. But when you see that she's taken $105,000 from this group to basically to get her vote on this, that's wrong. It's just absolutely wrong. Why would she take that? And the money in the politics, it sickens me to know that the Speaker of the House of the United States. House of Representatives has taken that kind of money from venture capitalist firms who want to get their way, who want to nose out the small businessmen again. And that's what the party stands for, isn't it? Isn't that one of the tenets of the Democratic Party? We stand for the small guy. We stand for the small businessmen. It wasn't General Motors that built this country. It wasn't IBM. It wasn't Ford. It wasn't. It was the small businessmen who built this country. And even today, the lion's share of jobs in this country are with small businesses. And yet, our politicians allow the big guys to come in and take the cream off the top once again. And it's wrong, and it's especially wrong for a Democrat. I can almost understand if it's a Republican out there guys, putting up that kind of actions. But I don't understand a Democrat doing that. I do not understand the Democrats. Starting way back when, the Democrats have been for the small guy, for the little guy. And when I see the Speaker of the House siding with these venture capitalist firms, which by their very nature are definitely not small guys, it's wrong. And we need to write Nancy Pelosi and call her office and let her know that that's wrong, because it is. It's wrong for America. It's wrong for small businessmen. It's wrong for the Democratic Party, in that order. And we need to do something about it. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the program. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a minute or two. Isn't it, though? I was just lamenting that fact earlier today. Just about every day, it's a rich man's world. Ah, yes. Wouldn't we all love to have a boatload of dough? Well, maybe not a boatload. Maybe a shoebox full. That might do it for a while. How many $100 bills would a shoebox hold? That's a little project for somebody. Could you get... Well, you see, you'd have to get 10,000 of them in there for $1 million. I don't think you could get 10,000 of them in there. I don't know. Depends what size shoes, too. Now, if it's like a big 13D, you could get them. Where am I going with this? I don't know. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. Oh, aren't we Americans so predictable? Aren't we just as predictable as hell? Car shoppers, I got this out of the USA Today, and I just had to laugh when I read this, really. Car shoppers who panicked in June and July, you know all those people that went out and got rid of their pickup trucks and their SUVs, they're panicking June and July about gas prices, are losing interest in small cars and hybrids as fuel prices have declined. Now get this. As you know, gas here is still, what, $3.70-something a gallon. Aren't we so easily manipulated? Oh, it's fascinating. They get it up over $4. I think it got up to, what, $4.21 here, something like that. And it's down to $3.76 or right in that neighborhood, and everybody's going, oh, ain't this great? Ain't this great? Gas is cheap. Folks, it's $3.76 a gallon. Might be less where you are, might be more. I don't know, but it's still damned expensive. And everybody that went out and got rid of their, you know, I know a guy that bought a big Chevy SUV 2 years ago, paid $40,000 for it, 39-something, and went and traded it in on a small car and took a beating you wouldn't believe. He got something like 16 bills for it, something in that neighborhood, traded on a small car. Took a horrible beating. Now, he couldn't save, and he's not an environmentalist. Oh, no, he's not an environmentalist at all. In fact, he wanted to save a buck. How long would he have to drive with this small car to save enough money to make up for what he lost in that trade? Oh, my God. Anyway, the article goes on. His gas prices topped $4 a gallon for about 7 weeks this summer. Truck and SUV sales plummeted. And small cars sales went up. But Edmunds.com, which attracts about 50% of people using the Internet to research their next car purchase, now says research interest in compact crossover SUVs and compact SUVs is now on the rise. They were stunned by the $4 gallon gas. Now it's a return to rationality and the singular fixation on fuel economy is gone. I'm fascinated by that. I am. It drops all the way down to $3.75 a gallon, and already, forget the gas savers. Let's get us a gas hog again, all right? Let's go to the phone. I think we'll go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Maybe not. I think I just cut somebody off. Forgive me, please. Try us again. I did. I just cut somebody off. Oh, well. They'll call back, I'm sure. I've got to get the engineers in to change this phone system around. We've got a rather elaborate phone system here in the studio and really don't need it to be as complicated as it is. And when we have lightning and all that around here, it resets everything. I think what the problem is, I think the phone has to ring like 6 times now before it's answered. Is that 5 ringy-dingies? Or 6 ringy-dingies? Maybe that's 6. Oh, that's more than 6. You're getting engineering right on the line here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
Hi, Guy?
Yes.
It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I just... You know, it's so funny because there's so much, it's been proven over and over again. If you get a diesel car and get the right filtering system, you can run it on Wesson.
Yeah.
Cooking oil.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, anything. I know. I'm from a farm background, and, you know, tractors, I mean, it's they're the most rudimentary. Well, they were. Not so much anymore, but they were the most rudimentary of engines and not so particular about the way the fuel has to be. Diesels are losing favor, aren't they, with the price of diesel fuel these days, and no one has properly explained that to me, why diesel's so much higher than gasoline. Do you know?
I think the oil companies probably have their dirty little hands in it.
You don't say. You actually believe the oil companies would overcharges for
look at it. Most, where do you get diesel from but a gas station?
That's right, delivered to the same place. It used to be cheaper than gasoline. Now it's I don't know what it is today. I haven't noticed lately, but it was 40-50 cents a gallon higher here not too long ago.
It's just, I don't know, you know, and like you said, Americans are just so, like I said, I am now at the point where I firmly believe in mid-America, they do have a masochistic streak up in them. Where then, if then, you know, these are the same kind of people who want to get tied up and beat.
Yeah, I know. Say, you live in New York. Do you own a car?
No. I got rid of it as soon as I set foot back here.
You didn't need one. You don't need one there, do you?
No, and you know what I'm doing, as nerdy as it may sound? Get like a bike, put a hitch onto it, so I can go grocery shopping when I need to.
Hey, I don't blame you a bit. If I love New York City, and it's easy to get around there, and a bicycle, hey, it's good enough. Owning a car seemed to me to be a terrible pain in the rear in New York City.
And the thing is, when our mayor, Bloomberg, tried to implement like a tax, for commuter tax for the people coming outside in.
Oh, yeah.
Basically fought down. It was slammed down. And, you know, people, they were basically going with torches and pitchforks in front of Gracie Mansion. You know, and I'm like, what is this obsession?
He wanted to do the same type of program. I believe that they have it in London, I believe.
Yeah, and rightfully so, because it's mostly outsiders coming in. You're wearing down our roads. You're wearing down everything. You should be paying more, but, you know, everybody wants something for nothing.
I think in London it's something like $9 to come into to the certain designated area wherever they have it. And it would be easy to do in Manhattan.
Well, and the thing is, the areas where they wanted to charge is so car unfriendly, it's not funny.
Oh, I tell you, I got a lesson the last time I was there. I wasn't in a stretch limo, but what they call a limo anymore is, you know, just a nice black Lincoln. Anyway, the guy driving me down the street, and I'm considering myself a good driver. We're wailing down the street, one of the side, you know, all those delivery trucks, they park in these littles, and he drives through a place that a NASCAR driver wouldn't go. At 200, you know, he drives through this. I'm thinking, oh my God, this car won't fit through that spot. I won't. You know, you go whipping through there at 45 miles an hour with a quarter of an inch on each side.
Oh yeah.
I've said on the program, I think the New York City cab drivers are better drivers than the NASCAR boys.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But it's just amazing. But you know what? I owe this all to, you know, the whole obsession with cars. Very clever advertising.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you know, and it's amazing how, okay, like I'm recently divorced and I'm back in the dating scene, and it's amazing. One of the questions I get asked, you know, like when you're going through someone's resume in the dating scene, is, do you own a car? And I look at them like, I'm from New York City. I don't need a car.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, click, you know. You know, don't even ask about, you know, what's my educational background, what kind of family, do I have children, you know.
Yeah, do you have a car? What kind of car do you have? So because, one of the things for so many years has been reflective of a person's personality, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, hell.
Yeah.
It's not like I can't afford one, it's just, it's a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
In New York City to have one.
That's how much it costs to just park a car in just the average place in New York City.
Well, if you can find a parking spot, well, that's like rent. It could go into hundreds of dollars a month.
I'm crazy. I like my car. I have a secondhand car, but it's in pristine condition. And you know, I don't want a fingerprint on it. I can't imagine just leaving it out on the street in New York City. You know, you just have to give that up, wouldn't you? That attitude. You just have to say, oh.
Well, I was so happy to get rid of my car where I, you know, it was just like, hey, you know, because I'd rather be freed from $800-$900 a month, which I was paying outside of New York.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if I was living in New York.
Insurance and the gas. No, you bet free. You bet.
It was more worth it for me to basically give it away.
Yeah.
I said, if I am in a position where I have to get a car, what I'm going to do is get a diesel and have it modified so it can take vegetable oil.
Yeah.
And have Crisco fill my...
Well, when if you're down at the local diner and have a bite to eat, you know, before you leave, ask to get a cup to go, you know.
No, actually, you can use regular gallons of... I was reading an article here online. You can actually use regular cooking oil.
No kidding.
It doesn't. It doesn't even have to be used anymore. It's about filtering. Because they have the clean oil and the other kind of oil.
Wow. Vegetable oil. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah. And it's even more, it's even better. It's a bit more expensive, but it works out because with the used oil, you know, you have to filter it out so you won't get the clumps of food inside your engine.
Well, how about for getting back and forth to work or socially and all? You do fine with, do you have to use a cab very often or a bus or?
No. The only time I use a cab is if I have too much to drink.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, but most times I'm taking the train. And the subways are relatively safe now.
Oh, yes. New York's got a great subway system. And
24/7, 365.
Yeah. I think the nicest one that I've ever seen is in Washington, D.C.
But they don't run 24/7.
No, they don't. They shut down about midnight or 1 a.m., yeah. Something like that. They do start up again like at 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they don't go 24/7.
And once I don't get, it's like, say you live in the outer suburbs like, you know, Virginia or whatever, I'll never forget one time the commuter rails, which is basically in the morning they have a train going from the outer suburbs into the city,
mm-hmm.
And after 10, forget it.
Ooh.
And then in the afternoons, like around 4, they have from Washington out there. And after a certain amount of time, forget it. So it's like one way.
Every community in the United States needs to have,
you know, first of all, it's a for-profit thing, which,
yes.
You know, that's what they're concentrating on, which public transportation should not be.
Well, there's going to have to be more of it, and there's going to have to be a lot more of it. I see many big cities now are at least putting, starting to think outside the box and talking about streetcars again and that sort of thing. And it's going to come to it, and we better just realize we'll gradually morph into that once again. There's no question.
Well, you see, like I said, the car has been such, and this is all due to clever advertising. It's like, again, you know, and on every aspect of our lives, you know, the car has taken over, and we got to break ourselves free from that mentality.
Yes, a car was advertised and turned into represent freedom here in this country. You can just go do what you want.
And it's not.
Think how many people are slaves to cars, paying huge car payments and all that. It's different than it was. And we're gradually going to change over to something else. My question is, and I'll never know this in my lifetime, I'd love to know where it goes and how far it goes with the automobile. Will they be almost, will it be something that everybody continues to have in a different form, with a different energy source, or will there just be a drastic reduction in the numbers of personal vehicles, somewhere down the road? I'd love to know the answer to that.
I think it'll be drastic. I think literally, Americans are going to be forced to live like the Europeans and Japanese, where so few people have cars.
Yeah, perhaps you're right, and because there's so many of the ways that they would power a car. Well, even the lithium batteries, there's a limit to how much lithium there is.
Mm-hmm.
So
vegetable oil is the way to go.
There you go.
It's an unlimited source, and you know, not even ethanol, and it's very cheap and.
I don't even know the price of vegetable oil anymore.
Yeah.
I guess.
You cannot go wrong. You know, then they try to create these urbanness that you'll come out smelling like French fries.
All right. Now, here's the deal, Kevin. What are you going to do with those big yellow Wesson 1 gallon plastic containers that you've got piled up? You know.
Well, New York has a good recycling
system. Okay.
Put it in the recycle.
Yeah, a big Wesson oil container. Oh, man. Yeah, I haven't bought any Wesson oil in a long time. I know the gallon jugs you said. Where are we going with this, talking to anybody about Wesson oil jugs? Anyway, good to hear from you as always, Kevin.
Okay.
And be careful on your bike.
Okay, yeah. Thanks.
It's going to come to that, isn't it? Some of you youngsters listening, you'll be able to see where we're going. I doubt if I do. People will keep buying gas if it gets up to be $10, $15 a gallon and they'll hang on to that car somehow. But someday you're not going to be able to do it. And where will it go? Will we have hydrogen vehicles? Will we have these lithium batteries? And I was just reading a story the other day about that, about how there is a certain amount of lithium on this earth, and there wouldn't be enough, they don't think, to power all the automobiles that they need to power. So I don't know. 866-546-5254. I don't want to make out like I'm an expert on this subject, because I am not. I certainly am not. I had a story here I want to tell you. What did I do with it, as usual? Man, I am so disorganized. So disorganized during the show. I've got to do better. I guess I lost this little story that I had here. But here's one I found extremely entertaining this morning. Fort Wayne, and perhaps you've heard about this, although I doubt that you heard it on the mainstream media anywhere. A Fort Wayne, Indiana man was busted for giving himself a lube job Monday. Police arrested Ronald Miller. Now, this is no kidding. Police arrested Ronald Miller after they found him in his house, now get this, pleasuring himself with a claw hammer, a plastic bag, and motor oil. I'm trying to say this with a straight face. Officers driving in the neighborhood noticed Miller standing in a living room window of his house, buck naked. The cops got out of the car and went to the front door, which was left wide open. When they walked in, they saw Miller performing an unspecified lewd act with a claw hammer, a plastic bag, and some motor oil. Miller reportedly didn't even acknowledge the officers until they announced they were in the room. Miller is charged with public indecency. He had a previous conviction for public nudity on his record. A neighbor who told police she often sees Miller walking around in his birthday suit said, quote, "He's not right." You know, you can put your imagination to that, and your imagination doesn't even know where to go with that particular story. I guess there's a fine line between an exhibitionist and a lunatic, and this guy's crossed the line, no doubt about it. A claw hammer, a plastic hammer, a plastic bag, and motor oil. I wonder, see, I can't even get my imagination around that one. I wonder if a ball peen hammer would have worked instead. I don't know. Is there something specific about having the claw you got to have? I don't know. Oh, my. It's one of those days. Crazy day. We're coming up to the weekend here. I have got so much to get ready before going to the convention next week. We have to check out all of our remote equipment, and I see on the chat room, Powerpuff says, "My imagination does not know what to do with the hammer." Well, I don't either. I just can't figure out can't get there with that. Claw hammer. I don't know. Sounds painful somehow. I don't know how, but sounds painful. Always get good suggestions from the, and that reminds me, those of you listening on other venues, on iTunes and stuff, stop on over and visit the chat room at the Head On Radio Network chat room. Be sure and sign up for it and jump in and chat with the folks there. We've got a good group in there right now, and they'd love to hear from you, and you'll get a lot of good out of talking to them, I promise. A very astute group. Very. Our listeners are here in the Head On Radio Network. There's some of the best listeners in all of radio. They know, they're just well-versed. And I don't have to worry about having a Limbaugh-type audience or a Hannity-type audience or those flaming crazies that listen to Mark Levin and like that. We have, I'm not going where they're talking on the website now. they're having a good time with that. Yeah. Well, we have mentioned today about the uncertainty on Wall Street and the uncertainty of the economy and all that right now. And I know a lot of you are facing difficult times. It's one of those times, and it is hard to look at the Wall Street news and understand exactly where this is all going. The market seems to be completely detached from normal everyday life, and it's no prediction of whether we're in a recession or not, evidently. Just none at all. And the market keeps on rolling along, evidently, staying, well, at a decent level. And we don't know where it's going to end up. And there's so many people, and I guess my point here as I'm rambling on, and my point is there's uncertainty with so many people. And you don't know what next month is going to bring. A lot of people don't know what next week is going to bring. And that's unfortunate. Most Americans aren't used to living like that. Not used to living like that at all. And it's causing some difficult times. It's causing emotional problems with people. It's causing family problems, great financial problems in many cases. And I just hope that all of us can weather the storm and somehow get through it. It's may take a while, but somehow we will get through this, I am sure. So hang in there. I hear from a lot of you that have problems, and I appreciate you sharing with me. And, yeah, I share right back. So I want to thank you for being with us here on the Guy James Show today. We always appreciate your listenership. Do want to remind you that we are a listener-supported program, and if you are able to do so, we will hope you'll give us a little help with the program and our venture out to the convention coming up week after next. We'll be leaving on a Sunday and coming back, I think, on Friday. So big adventure at the convention. It's going to be fun. Well, thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We do so appreciate your listenership and look forward to being with you again next week. And until then, thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Gilly Sears, music director, and don't you dare forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang, and thanks.